This podcast is supported by Planned Parenthood Federation of America. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. The Supreme Court stole our right to control our bodies. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the essential health care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. Help ensure the next generation can decide their own futures. Donate to Planned Parenthood. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, the most interesting person in the Mueller report is the man who was hired to protect the president and turned out to be the most damning witness against him. Mike Schmidt on Donald McGahn. It's Monday, April 22nd. Mike, I imagine you spent your weekend continuing to read the Mueller report. Is that pretty much sum up the weekend for you?
Yes, fair.
And what were you most interested in upon further examination of it?
The president's relationship with his White House counsel, Donald F. McGahn II. Statements provided to investigators by McGahn are cited 157 times in the report, more than any of the other 500 witnesses Mueller talked to. We always knew that McGahn and his cooperation with Mueller were going to be a central part of the investigation. But what we see in these details is McGahn is the narrator for Mueller. He is being used to tell the story. Mueller's way of getting inside the White House and finding out what was really going on as he investigated whether the president was obstructing justice.
What's interesting about that, Mike, is that when I think about Don McGahn, I think of him as this loyalist to Trump, the figure who more than anyone is responsible for pushing through conservative judges, conservative Supreme Court justices, shaping the president's judicial legacy, being a Trump guy.
It's much more complex than that. Yes, McGahn was a loyalist to the president. He was the architect of perhaps his greatest political achievements. He really quarterbacked the things that the president's base love about Trump. But he also helped Mueller in a way that, as you can see here, was incredibly damaging to the president.
Well, so take us into the report. Where does McGahn make his first big appearance?
McGahn is all over the obstruction section of the report. But the episodes that I think are most illustrative are about the president's efforts in June of 2017 to have McGahn fire Mueller. On Saturday, June 17th, 2017, the president called McGahn and directed him to have the special counsel removed. In interviews with this office, McGahn recalled that the president called him at home twice and on both occasions directed him to call the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, who was overseeing the Mueller investigation, and say that Mueller had conflicts that precluded him from serving as special counsel. On the first call, McGahn recalled the president saying something like, "You gotta do this. You gotta call Rod." McGahn said he told the president that he would see what he could do. McGahn was perturbed by the call and did not intend to act on the request. When the president called McGahn a second time to follow up on the order to call the Department of Justice, McGahn recalled the president was more direct, saying something like, "Mueller has to go, and call me back when you do it." McGahn understood the president to be saying that the special counsel had to be removed by Rosenstein. McGahn decided he had to resign. He called his personal lawyer and then called his chief of staff, Annie Donaldson, to inform her of his decision. He then drove to the office to pack up his belongings and submit his resignation letter. Donaldson prepared to resign along with McGahn. That evening, McGahn called both the White House chief of staff, Reince Priebus, and the president's top aide, Steve Bannon, and told them that he intended to resign. Priebus recalled that McGahn said the president had asked him to, quote, do crazy shit, but he thought McGahn was trying to protect Priebus from what he did not need to know. Priebus and Bannon both urged McGahn not to quit, and McGahn ultimately returned to work that Monday and remained in his position. He had not told the president directly that he planned to resign, and when they next saw each other, the president did not ask McGahn whether he had followed through with calling Rosenstein.
So, Mike, that's pretty shocking. But we basically knew most of that story, right? Because several months after the incident took place, you had reported it.
In January of 2018, Maggie Haberman and I broke that story.
Hi, everyone. It's 4 o'clock in New York. A blockbuster account in the New York Times today makes public for the very first time that White House counsel Don McGahn is serving as an often invisible but highly effective human guardrail to Donald Trump and his presidency.
For me, the most excruciating and interesting part of the report is about what Trump did after we broke the story. In order to understand the events, you have to know what happened between the June 2017 firing attempt and January. Because McGahn didn't fire Mueller, McGahn had fallen out of favor with the president. And later in the summer of 2017, a new team of lawyers who the president is relying on to make the decisions about whether to cooperate with the Mueller investigation sell the president on a strategy of allowing Mueller to interview whomever he wants in the White House. McGahn did not want that to happen.
Then why not?
Because McGahn had studied previous investigations into administrations, and he knew that simply handing over White House officials to serve as witnesses to investigators who were under immense pressure from the public to go after the president could be very damaging to Trump. But Trump had been sold on this idea of cooperation by his new team of lawyers who said that the sooner he cooperated, the more quickly they could bring an end to the investigation, maybe even by that fall.
So Trump signs on to this plan, the kind of cooperation with Mueller plan.
Correct. And as part of that, McGahn begins to go in and talk to Mueller's team. And this highly unusual thing occurs where Mueller's team gets direct access to the president's lawyer, the person the president was consulting with about whether to take different moves to try and curtail the investigation. What you see in the report is sort of unfiltered Donald Trump running his mouth to his lawyer, something we usually don't see in an investigation because lawyers are typically protected and not interviewed.
It's pretty ironic that the lawyer who discouraged the president from cooperating with Mueller becomes the most important cooperative voice in Mueller's investigation.
When McGahn and his lawyers sit down in the windowless conference room in Mueller's office in the fall of 2017 for his first interview, he can't understand why it is that the president is allowing him to go in. He's very skeptical of this new team of lawyers, and he thinks that maybe what's going on here is that they're setting him up to take the fall. And he sits across from Mueller's team and cooperates as fulsomely as he could.
So McGahn fulsomely cooperates with the special counsel. And somehow, after he does that, you learn that he has done so and learn what he has told the special counsel about this request from the president back in June, and you report it.
Breaking news from President Trump. He's in Davos, Switzerland this morning, denying a blockbuster report from the New York Times that last June the president ordered the firing of special counsel Robert Mueller before backing down in the face of resistance from his White House counsel.
And then Trump begins an effort to try and get McGahn to recant what he said to Mueller's team.
And that's what's in this next section of the Mueller report.
Correct. This is from the section entitled, "The President Orders McGahn to Deny That the President Tried to Fire the Special Counsel." Mm-hmm. On January 25th, 2018, the New York Times reported that in June of 2017, the president had ordered McGahn to have the Department of Justice fire the special counsel. After the article was published, the president dismissed the story when asked about it by reporters, saying, "Fake news, folks, fake news, a typical New York Times fake story." Hmm. The report goes on to say, on January 26, 2018, the president's personal counsel called McGahn's attorney and said that the president wanted McGahn to put out a statement denying that he had been asked to fire the special counsel and that he had threatened to quit in protest. McGahn's attorney informed the president's personal counsel that the Times story was accurate in reporting that the president wanted the special counsel removed. Consistent with that position, McGahn did not correct the Times story. On February 5, 2018, the president complained about the Times article to the White House staff secretary, Rob Porter. The president told Porter that the article was bullshit and he had not sought to terminate the special counsel. The president then directed Porter to tell McGahn to create a record to make clear that the president never directed McGahn to fire the special counsel. Porter thought the matter should be handled by the White House Communications Office, but the president said he wanted McGahn to write a letter to the file, quote, "for our records," and wanted something beyond a press statement to demonstrate that the reporting was inaccurate. The president referred to McGahn as a, quote, "lying bastard," and said he wanted a record from him.
Mike, let me interrupt to make sure I have this right. Is what I'm hearing you say that the president asked McGahn to falsify documents?
Essentially, yeah. He's asking him to go back and create a document that would directly undermine what he told investigators. And then the president goes further. The next day, on February 6, 2018, White House Chief of Staff John Kelly scheduled time for McGahn to meet with him and the president in the Oval Office to discuss the Times article. The president began the Oval Office meeting by telling McGahn that the New York Times story did not, quote, "look good," and McGahn needed to correct it. McGahn recalled the president said, "I never said to fire Mueller. I never said fire. You need to correct this. You're the White House counsel."
Hmm. Is this the president going further, as you said?
Well, let's hear the rest of the story.
Okay.
McGahn told the president he did not understand the conversation that way and instead had heard, "call Rod. There are conflicts. Mueller has to go." The president asked McGahn whether he would, quote, "do a correction," and McGahn said no. McGahn thought the president was testing his mettle to see how committed McGahn was to what happened. Kelly described the meeting as, quote, "a little tense."
I suspect it was a little tense.
The president also asked McGahn in the meeting why he had told the special counsel's investigators that the president had told him to have the special counsel removed. McGahn responded that he had to and that the conversations with the president were not protected by attorney-client privilege. The president then asked, "what about those notes? Why do you take notes? Lawyers don't take notes." McGahn responded that he keeps notes because he is a, quote, "real lawyer," and explained that notes create a record and are not a bad thing. The president said, I've had a lot of great lawyers, like Roy Cohn. He did not take notes.
Roy Cohn, the president's longtime, now deceased lawyer, who used to work for Joseph McCarthy and who was disbarred.
And largely seen as one of the more unethical lawyers in American legal history.
Mm-hmm.
After the Oval Office meeting concluded, McGahn recalled that Kelly said that he had pointed out to the president that McGahn had not backed down and would not budge. Following the Oval Office meeting, the president's personal counsel called McGahn's counsel and relayed that the president was, quote, fine with McGahn.
As in, the president has kind of given up on this.
Yes, and it's sort of a theme in the obstruction part, where eventually Trump either loses interest or sort of gives up on his efforts. And in this case, he stopped pushing McGahn to a point in which he would have gotten himself into greater trouble.
And what do you make of this scene, Mike? What are you thinking about when you're reading all this about McGahn?
Well, from where we sit today, it clearly illustrates the competing forces of McGahn. McGahn was the one that stopped the president from firing Mueller, and that would have devastated his presidency. And McGahn was that guardrail. And then you look at this and you say, well, the only reason we know about this is because McGahn went in and cooperated and told investigators about this and gave them a roadmap for how the president tried to interfere with the investigation. So on one hand, he has protected the president, and on another, he has damaged him by disclosing that actual protection. The president's lawyers had sold him on the idea of cooperating. That opened the door for McGahn to go in and talk to Mueller's team. And what the president apparently didn't understand is that when you are a witness and you go in, you have to tell them everything you know and be truthful about it. It's as if he didn't understand what cooperation meant.
So the president is looking at this report, seeing all these names in there, especially McGahn, and he's feeling betrayed just to find their accounts existing in the report.
Yes. And he's saying, hold on. Back in the summer of 2017, when we first confronted the specter of the Mueller investigation, I was sold on the idea that if we cooperated, we'd quickly bring an end to the investigation. Hold on. The investigation went on for 2 years, and now I've got a report filled with all of these damning accounts from the people closest to me because we waved them into Mueller's office?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what?
But ultimately, isn't the most important thing that McGahn prevented the president from committing the ultimate act of obstruction, firing the special counsel?
Yes, but when that is disclosed, it hurts the president. And we wouldn't have that disclosure if McGahn hadn't told Mueller about it. And what shows us how damaging it may be is that the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, seized on this right out of the gate after the report was released.
I'm telling you, he's confused.
So he
gave
confused.
Three different versions.
So let me ask you a question.
The special prosecutor
McGahn,
comes to the conclusion he's definitively telling the truth. His lawyer should tell us which of those three versions is true. And how
McGahn,
does he know which one is true now when he couldn't figure it out then?
Here's what we have.
He McGahn, began raising questions about McGahn's recollection.
It's unfair to use that.
McGahn thought that the president was telling him to fire special counsel Mueller. That is the bottom line.
And why do that? Why are they going after McGahn if ultimately there is no charge of obstruction of justice? What's the point?
Because the president now faces a political problem from the report. Democrats are increasingly talking about impeachment.
If proven, some of this would be impeachable, yes.
All right.
Obstruction of justice, if proven, would be impeachable.
And you're going to go about to see if you can prove it?
Well, we're going to see where the facts lead us.
All right. Congressman Gerald Nadler, Democrat from New York. Thanks for coming on and sharing your views, sir.
Thank you.
And if you look at the report, this may be one of the better episodes for the Democrats to use to build an argument against Trump.
We have to stop, take a deep breath, and be willing to say that's wrong. And I'll stand up and say so, and I hope a lot of other people will too.
The president can see that. Any type of impeachment against Trump would rely heavily, like the report, on McGahn. And it's notable that the first person that Giuliani attacks is McGahn. Because he's so important, he becomes a target for the president.
And like, how has McGahn responded to these attacks from the administration?
On Friday night, McGahn's lawyer, Bill Burke, put out a statement in response to Giuliani's attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And what the statement is essentially saying is saying, why is it that you guys are attacking me? I didn't think that cooperating in the first place was a good idea. I went in and did it anyway. In the course of that, Mueller learned that I protected the president from hurting himself time and time again. And ultimately, the Justice Department found that the president didn't break the law. So why is it that you're now coming after me and trying to call me a liar? And then McGahn ends his statement with a bit of a dig at a president who he knows is insecure when others get credit for his accomplishments. Don, nonetheless, appreciates that the president gave him the opportunity to serve as White House counsel and assist him with his signature accomplishments.
So in this statement, Don McGahn is basically saying, everything you're proud of having done as president, I did that. And by the way, you're still president because of me. So leave me out of it.
Knock it off. Go away. I did everything you asked me to do. I protected you from yourself. You haven't been accused of breaking the law.
Because of me.
Because of me. Go away. Leave me alone.
Mike, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by Chevron. Methane management is important to achieving a lower carbon future. Chevron is aiming to keep methane in the pipe. They're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices, and they've trialed over 13 advanced detection technologies, including drones and satellites. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.
Hi, I'm Megan Loram, the director of photography at the New York Times. A photograph can do a lot of different things. It can connect us. It can bring us to places we've never been before. It can capture a story in a universal visual language. But one thing that all these photographs have in common is that, you know, they don't just come out of the ether. We spend a lot of time anticipating news stories, working with the best photographers across the globe. These are photographers who have spent years mastering their technical craft, developing their skills as visual chroniclers of our world. You know, getting certified as a scuba diver and learning how to shoot underwater to document climate change, or tremendous cardiovascular training in order to ski on the slopes next to Olympic athletes. This is an effort that takes tons of time and consideration and resources. All of this is possible only because of New York Times subscribers. If you're not a subscriber yet, you can become one at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's what else you need to know today. On Sunday, terrorists carried out a series of coordinated suicide bombings against churches and hotels in Sri Lanka, killing at least 200 people and injuring nearly 500 more. The timing on Easter and the targets, including three Catholic churches packed with worshipers, seemed designed to inflict maximum harm to Christians and drew a condemnation from Pope Francis.
Ho preso con tristezza e dolore la notizia dei gravi attentati.
Police in Sri Lanka have detained 13 suspects, but did not immediately identify them. On Sunday, The Times reported that Sri Lankan security officials had been warned about a potential threat against churches from a radical Islamist group 10 days ago, but it was unclear what, if any, precautions had been taken in response. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.
This podcast is supported by Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own online course. Start with a professional layout that fits your brand. Upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor. Create engaging content your audience will love. Then simply add a paywall and set the price. You can charge a one-time fee or sell subscriptions. Turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/daily to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.